this year, as well as all say the Kachim's Leila Nishmas Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Kupiatsky. Today's shir is Masechta Erech in Daf Yutes, and we will begin on Daf Yutes from an Aleph at the Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, Oymi Mishkoli Alai. If somebody pledges to give his weight to Hegdish, Nois Mishkoli, he has to give whatever his actual weight is, and Kesef Im Zov, either in silver or in gold. And Mitzvah Shem, the Gemara will explain this line of the Mishnah. Interesting point that the Rosh makes. The Rosh says that at different times during the day, we weigh differently. Before we eat meals or after we eat meals, different experiences. So the Rosh says that a person who makes this nether, we have to look at what point of the day he was at when he made the nether. So if he made the nether when he is typically heavier, he has to give the... And when he comes to weigh himself, he has to weigh himself at a corresponding time during the day. If it's, and so too vice versa. And the Mefarshim explain the Rosh based on the Machloikis of Rashi and Tosfos that we discussed in the previous year. Rashi said that when a person promised to give somebody's value, so we can't look at the value based on when he made the nether, we look at it based on what we're doing the actual evaluation. And Pshat, Rashi said, is because we have no way of knowing what he was worth at the time he made the nether. So Rashi is clearly indicating that were we to have that ability, then we would have to do whatever we can to do so. So here, where I made a nether to give my weight, and during different times of the day I have different weights, and we know that, so we should weigh the person based on the time that he made the nether. But according to the Tosfos that we quoted in the previous year, the Tosfos said it's based on Psukim, so how do we understand the Rosh? So the Farshim say, the Tosfos says that's strictly a din by Domim, where you're going to evaluate yourself. This din that we're learning in the Mishnah that the Rosh is commenting on is not regarding Domim, a person's value. It's talking about Mishkoli, his weight. And therefore, it's a different halacha. It says the Mishnah Maisa be'imah shomar Yamatya. There was the mother of Yamatya, Shomar Mishka Biti Alai. She said she's going to donate the weight of her daughter. And as Mefarshim saying there, apparently there were those that had that minig, that if somebody in Rechmanso on the Mishpacha wasn't well, they would donate the weight of that person for tzedakah. V'also Yerushalayim, here too the Mefarshim explained, why did she go to Yerushalayim? She didn't want to be magdish the money before she arrived in Yerushalayim, because then the money would be hegdish, and she would have a problem of me'ila behegdish, so she purposely waited till she got to Yerushalayim to be magdish it at the last moment. V'shokla mishklazov, and she gave the weight in gold. Says the Mishnah further, mishkla yadi alai. Somebody says he's going to give the weight of his hand. And there's an issue when you say you're going to give the weight of your hand, because there's no way of weighing your hand, because it's connected to your body, and you can make it heavier or lighter. So how do you get an accurate read? So Yehuda Omer, Malach Chobes Mayim, you fill a barrel of water, or Machnisa Ad Marpikoi, and put your hand into the armpit or the shoulder, V'shoik, and then, so you know how much water was displaced. Then, and as we're going to see in the Gemara, the hand of a donkey is the hand of an animal most similar to the hand of a person. So take a donkey hand, and when you see that it displaced the same amount of water as your hand displaced, you weigh that donkey hand, and now you have the weight of the hand that you owe to Hegdish. Now, Farshim say, of course, it's not necessary to go through this entire procedure. If you know how big your hand is, and we're saying that the donkey hand is similar to the human hand, so just compare it. Farshim explained that the Mishnah feels, the Tanakhama will see it's the opinion of Yehuda, feels that this will give you a better read. Furthermore, the Farshim asks that the word of Vishoikal mentioned here is sort of out of place. First, you have to go through the procedure, and then v'shoikel you weigh. Why does the Mishnah use the word v'shoikel right at the beginning of the procedure? So I saw three pshatim. One pshat is that v'shoikel here doesn't mean to weigh. V'shoikel means you take the basar chamor, not to weigh. Another pshat is, since the entire purpose of this exercise is to ultimately get to the weight of the hand of the chamor, so that's why the Mishnah right away uses the word v'shoikel. A third pshat, nice pshat, is that you're going to use this donkey's hand to weigh. But there's an issue. If you put the donkey's hand into water, it absorbs water and it makes it heavier. You don't get an accurate read. So you have to weigh it when there is no water absorbed in it, because otherwise you won't get an accurate read. Comments Rabbi Yossi to this entire procedure. You can never get an exact match between the hand of a person and the hand of a donkey. Ella, what do you do if somebody promised the weight of his hand? We estimate how much his hand weighs, and that's what you give. So the Gemara begins. The Mishnah said that if you promise to give your weight to the Hegdish, give him kesef, kesef, zov, zov. Mayim kesef, kesef, zov, zov. And the Mepharshim explained the Gemara's question is, when do you give silver? When do you give gold? The Mishnah says, silver, gold. When do you do what? Another pshat that I saw is, what's the im? What does the Mishnah mean with the word im? Answers the Gemara, Amr Yehuda. The pshat in the Mishnah is as follows. Pirish kesef, if the person said he's going to give his weight in silver, then he has to give it in kesef, in silver. Pir zov, if he said he's going to give his weight in gold, zov, he must give it in gold. Ask the Gemara, pshita, that's an obvious halacha. Answers Gemara, kamashma, what we're learning from here is, tama, it's only the pirish when the person expressly indicated his weight in what material. Haloi pirish, but if he didn't express in what material, says the Gemara, the halacha is, pata nafshe b'kaldehu. He could use any material to weigh himself. To Rechava, as Rechava actually taught us, Dom Rechava, the Asra the Tikla Kufra, in a place where they weigh, where tar, where pitch is sold by weight, Pata Nafshi, a Philip Kufra. He could even use tar for as the material to weigh himself. Answers Gemara, that is also obvious. Why would I think differently? So Mepharshim asks, I'll tell you why you would think differently. We have a rule throughout Shas, Stam Nedarim Lahachmer. When you have an ambiguous neder, we have to go L'chumra. So why is it so obvious to the Gemara, as the Rishonim and Achronim, that if you didn't indicate what material you're using, it has to be, it could be any, even any inexpensive material? So I saw a number of tourism to this question as well. One tarot I saw, that's a din when you say a neder, but it's not a din by Hegdish. There we don't necessarily say Stam the Dharm Lahachmer. And that's, here we're talking about Hegdish as we've been learning the entire year. Another pshat that I saw is that the Gemara here is referring to a very unique situation. The person made a nether, he's going to give his weight to Hegdish. And when he made the nether, he didn't indicate what material he means. Now, when he comes to pay his pledge, he says, I meant tar. So we accept what he said. Why shouldn't he say the truth? That's a second pshat. A third pshat is as follows. What does the rule of Stam Nedarim Lahachmer say? The rule of Stam Nedarim Lahachmer says that if I say words, that could be interpreted in one of two ways. So there's a rule, Stam Nedarim Lahachmer. We take the stricter interpretation, not the more lenient interpretation. Here these words have no meaning. They don't point in one direction more than another direction. Here you don't say the rule of Stam Nedarim Lahachmer. So again, so ask the Gemara. So the fact that you're going to use the cheapest material is obvious. What's the Chiddush in the Mishnah? Answers the Gemara. L'tzricha the ikka the tokel, that those that use tar, they sell tar by weight. Vikka the kail, and that those that sell tar by value. Madatay mekivin the kula loitakla, it's not a material that's always sold by weight. Loy, it shouldn't be considered a material that you can weigh yourself with. Kamashman, that it is. Comments to Gemara. Omra Papa. Ba'asra the takli shamchi. in a place that onions are sold by weight, pata nafsha fil b'shamchi. So if you said you're going to give your weight, you could use onions. Answers the Gemara, Peshitta, why should onions be different? Answers the Gemara, letzricha the boss of the shakla, that in this location, the custom is that after, let's say you buy a pound of onions, after you buy a pound of onion, shadi trei talsa, the storekeeper adds two or three onions. Madataima. So since he always adds two or three onions, that should be indication that bottle taras mishkal, it's not considered a material, that item that's sold by weight, because he adds in these extra onions. Kamashman, that it's still considered an item sold by weight. And as Taisus explains, even though the Gemara Masechta Basra teaches us that whenever you buy something by weight, the storekeeper should add a little more. The halachic terminology for that is hechra. Two, three onions is not techra. Two, three onions is more. But on the other hand, I saw a very interesting tshuva from the Divrei Malkiel. Divrei Malkiel says as follows. The halacha is that a dover shebeminyan, Gemara Masechta Chulin, did in Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, that something that's sold by count, something that's counted, loy bottle, doesn't become bottle. So Divrei Malkiel says, what's the halacha if something is sold by count, but the count is, you throw in a little more? Is it still considered a davar shebeminyan? Al Gemara clearly teaches us, says the Divrei Malkiel, that even though you throw in a little more than the weight, it's still considered a davar shebemishkal. What would be the halacha of a davar shebeminyan? To give an example, there are places that if you buy a dozen bagels, they'll give you an extra bagel. It's called the baker's dozen. The question is, are those bagels considered a davar shebeminyan? You're paying for each bagel, but you get an extra one. So Divrei Malkiel says no. He says the pshat of a davar shebeminyan means that every single unit is sold individually. As soon, and that gives it a chshivas, and it gives it significance, and once it has that significance, it doesn't become bottle. As soon as that is broken, and it's not strictly sold dominion, it doesn't have the chshivas, and it can become bottle. So the Mishnah said, Maisa v'imah shel Matya, there was an incident with the mother of Yomatya who said she would give her daughter's weight, and she weighed it to Yerushalayim, and she gave her weight in gold. But we just learned, asked the Gemara, that you give your weight in anything. So my solicitor, isn't this contradictory to the way we've just explained the Mishnah? Answers the Gemara, Suri Mechs Rachitani. Vam Ada Chashuhu. Let's say the person is a significant individual. Afagav Dloy Pirish. Even though he didn't articulate what material he means, Lefkoide Mdinen. We evaluate what kind of person he is. And if he's the kind of person that, and we'll speak about this in a second more, if he's the kind of person that would give more, that's what we have to use. And to that point brings the Mishnah story, she said she's going to give the weight of her daughter, so the Brisker Rav is medayik in the Rambam, that in order for this rule to apply, that even though they didn't say what material they meant when they made the nether, it has to be a material, it's going to be gold, you have to have two conditions. One condition is that the individual has to be very wealthy. Only if he's very wealthy can he afford to give the weight in gold. And then the Rambam also says, just because somebody's wealthy doesn't mean he's generous. He also has to be a generous type of person. And if he's wealthy and generous, then the halacha will require that he should give his weight in gold. And in fact, I saw a tshuva, and the Shaila Tshuva's Torah Lishma. He discusses a situation where somebody who donated to Tzedakah three animals. And he brought three sheep, three small animals. And the Gaboim said, no, you can't get away with sheep. You have to give big animals. You're a wealthy person. So says the Torah Lishma, we have to look at this Rambam. We have to see if he indeed is very wealthy and also very generous, then the Gabbai are right. Otherwise, he could fulfill his obligation with the three sheep. Says the Gemara, Amar Yehuda, Ha'imer Kamasi Olai. If somebody says he's going to give his height, so what must he give? Nasan Shabbat Shen Nikvif. We have to give the value of a pole that doesn't bend. A pole that doesn't bend is thicker. If he ever used the word Malay Kamasi Olai, then he doesn't have to give such a sturdy pole. Nasan Shabbat and Nikvif, you could even give a pole that will bend. Meisvei asked the Gemara, it says in the Braisa, Kamasi Olai or Malay Kamasi Olai, no distinction if you use the word Kamasi. Or you use the word Malay Kamasi, Dalach is nice and Shabbat Shen and Nikvif, you have to give a sturdy pole. How do we reconcile Rabbi Yehuda's statement with the Braisa? Answers the Gemara, Huda Amik Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Yehuda bases his opinion on Rabbi Kiva's opinion, the Daik Lishna Yisera. Rabbi Yehuda, as we'll see in a moment, Rabbi Kiva says that if there's an extra word used in your statement, it must come to say something. So this individual, by adding the word Malay Kamasi, why do you add the word Malay Kamasi? To say that I don't have to give a sturdy pole, even a flexible pole will be good enough. Where do we see this opinion of Rabbi Kiva? The Tanan, here to a Mishnah Masechta Basra. Mishnah Masechta Basra discusses a situation where I sold you a piece of property. So the Mishnah begins, everybody agrees that not included in the sale is loya sabar v'sados. Different types of pits, underground pits, above ground, are not included. And that then applies, abi shekosef umka v'ruchva. Even if you were very specific in the contract, and you spoke about the all dimensions of the property, the bar and dos are not included. But now we begin the machloikus. V'tzarech likachlei derech. So I sold you the property. Everybody agrees that the pit in the property remains mine, but how am I supposed to get to the property? So Rabbi Kiva's opinion is, meicher be'en yofa meicher, that when I sell it generously. So I sold you all of the property. So yes, the pit remains mine. But if I want to get to the pit, I now have to go back to you and buy a way, a path to get to the pit. Divrei Rabbi Kiva. The Chum hold that it's not necessary. Why? Because the Chum's opinion is, Meicher be'en ram meicher. People don't sell so generously. So if I kept myself a pit, I also must have kept myself a way to get to the pit. Or Meider Bekiva. Rabbi Kiva agrees, Bezman sh'amalei chutz me'ela, that if I, in the contract, wrote specifically that the bar and dust are not included in the sale, she'en etzarech lech derech. Even Rabbi Kiva will say that I get a pit. Why? Says the Gemara. There was no need to add this into the contract. Because everybody agrees that even if it's not mentioned in the contract, I, the seller, keep the bar of dos. So by saying it, the komar, by saying it, what does that accomplish? That the path that normally Rabbi Kiva says I don't get to keep, here I'll keep. Says the Gemara, similarly says Rabbi Yehuda, Hachanami, Kivin Deloit Tzarech. There was no need for me to say Maloy Kamasi. I could have just said Kamasi, the Kamar, and I added the word Maloy. What is it for? The Tfui Milsakasi, that I don't have to give the sturdy pole, it could be a bendable pole. Ibailu. So now the Gemara begins a series of questions, and there's a number of Pshatim and Rishonim how to learn this Gemara. The Rabbeinu Gershom's approach is the simplest approach. His approach is that all of these statements, the few statements that we're going to learn now in the Gemara, do they have really any meaning? And if they have meaning, then I have an obligation. Or if they really have no meaning, I have no obligation, because my nether is foolishness. Rashi, I think, it's hard to really understand what Rashi wants. Does Rashi really agree with Rabbeinu Gershom? Or is Rashi just saying we're trying to understand what is the pshat in the words? Tosfos connects this Gemara to the previous Gemara. That we just learned Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that sometimes you have to give a sturdy pole, and sometimes you could give even a bendable, non-sturdy pole. So Gemara's question is that in all of these cases that we're now going to learn, what kind of pole would I have to give? A sturdy one or a not sturdy one? If somebody said, Amdi, Mahu, my stance, how much I stand, what does he have to give? How tall he is? Nothing. Sturdy, not sturdy. Or if he said rachva, does he have to give
a pole as wide that has the length equal to its width, or does it mean a different meaning? Yeshivasa mahu. He says, when I'm sitting, does he mean the pole as tall as he is when he's sitting? When we're sitting, we're not as tall as when we're standing. Does he mean a pole with the width of the seat? Does he mean nothing? Or does he mean a bendable pole versus non-bendable pole? Of your mahu, it's thick, my thickness. Hekefu mahu, my circumference. And the Gemara remains with a tekel. Mishka yadi alai. So we learned in the Mishnah that somebody obligated himself to give the weight of his hand. So says the Braisa, really just saying what we learned in the Mishnah. Tana bottom, Mishka yadi, Mishka ragli alai. If somebody obligated to give the weight of his hand, the weight of his foot. Rav Yehuda oimer mevi chavis, you bring a barrel of water, or mala mayim, or machnas biyad ad hatzil, you put your hand in into the armpit, or beregel ad arakuva, with your foot till the knee, v'shaykel basel chamor gidim etzamis, and you take the foot or the hand of a donkey when it still has all the gidim etzamis, as our hands and feet do, as well, v'naisel toich ash tismala, and you put them into the barrel of water, and like that, you'll know whatever is displaced by your hand, that much you'll have to give. Says the Gemara, V'afa pish en ra'i l'dover, even though there is no Abi's posik that says that you should use the limb of a donkey, zeich l'dover. Why? Because the posik says regarding the mitzrim, asher b'sar chamorim b'sarim. So we see that the bosom of the chamor is compared to the bosom of the mitzrim. The Farshim say it's not a good comparison. Because what the Pasuk really means when it says Hashem B'sar Chamayim B'sarim is speaking about the moral activities of the Mitzrim. It's not speaking about their physical hand. Amar Rav Yossi. So Rav Yossi says to Yehuda, Hech efshel chab b'basar k'negi b'asar. Gidim k'negi gidim at tzomis k'negi tzomis. You can never get a perfect match between a human's hand and the hand of the donkey. Amar Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda concurs. And he says, I'm them. You do the best you can. Amar Rav Yossi, so Rav Yossi says, if you're anyway relying, you're relying on some sort of estimation, you might say, yeah, so why do you have to go through this whole procedure with bringing the hand, the foot of a donkey? Just estimate the weight of your hand. Answers Rav Yehuda, come to Efshar Avdinen. As much as you can to get an accurate read, you should do. So comparing it to the going through this whole procedure is better than nothing. Biyad, so it's said in the Bryson, there is no dispute, that if I said I'm going to give my hand, the weight of my hand, I have to give ad ha'atzel, until my shoulder, until my armpit. So it seems from here that what is the definition of a hand? Your entire length of your hand. Ask the Gemara of Reminu, it says it in Braisa, that we know before the Kohanim did the Avodah, they had to do Kiddush Yadayim Reglayim. And the Aloch is, Kiddush Yadayim Reglayim B'Migdash Ad HaPerek. You only have to do Kiddush Yadayim Reglayim until the wrist. So isn't that a raya that the hand is only until the wrist? And this is actually relevant L'Aloch L'Maisa. Because the Shulchan Aruch, when it speaks about Hilchus Netilas Yadayim, says two opinions till where you have to do Netilas Yadayim. The first opinion is till your wrist. The other opinion is till the end of your fingers, till your knuckles. So, and the Shulchan Aruch says, what's better to do is till your wrist. Why? Based on this Gemara. Because here we clearly see that by Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim, they also did it till the wrist. So we have a question. What is the hand? Till the wrist or till the shoulder? Answers the Gemara. D'Raisa, mid-Raisa, the definition of a hand is out of perek only until the wrist. However, b'nedarim halach achaloshim ne adam, and when a person says a hand, he means the entire length of his hand. Ask the Gemara, is that true? U'daraisa, at a perek, by the raisa it's only until your wrist. V'gav tefillin. Let's think about the mitzvah tefillin. The ksiv yotcha. The Torah says you should put tefillin on yotcha. V'tanim debay menasha yotcha. What does it mean? Where should you put your tefillin shel yad? Zukiburus. The biceps, the muscle. So answer the Gemara. We have to say as follows. D'raisa kiburus kula. Mid-raisa, when it says yotcha, it means the biceps.
Gibaris Kul in the entire biceps. Binadarim, when we speak about Nadarim, Holachach Loshim Ne'adam, and it means the entire arm. Kedishadayim Reglaim B'migdash, that was done until the wrist, that's Ilchsik Gemir Latzalach L'mashim Sinai. So this Gemara is actually the basis for a very big Mechloikis Halacha, very Negeir Halach L'maisa. The Gemara here says that you're supposed to put on tefillin on the kiburis. The Beis Yosef quotes the Smak, who quotes the Shimush Rabbah, that says that you're supposed to put the tefillin on the lower half of your biceps, on the bottom half of the muscle. And that's actually what the Shulchan Aruch paskens. The Gra says he doesn't understand. Our Gemara says that you could put the tefillin shoyad on kiburis kulay, on the entire muscle. And what would be the nafkamina? The simplest nafkamina is what size should be your tefillin shoyad. Because according to the Shemusha Rabbah, you should have tefillin that are small that won't go above the lower half of the bicep. But the Gra says, based on the wording of our Gemara, kiburis kula. So you could have larger tefillin that could cover the entire bicep. And the question the Mishnah Berurah already asks is, what does the Shemusha Rabbah do with our Gemara that clearly indicates you could put the tefillin on the kiburis kula? So the Mishnah Berurah answers that it's not a question. When the Gemara says kiburis, we think that the definition of the word kiburis is the entire bicep. Tells us the Shemusha Rabbah wrong. The definition of the word kiburis is only the bottom half of the muscle. But now, there's an interesting shaila based on this Gemara. Again, nobody should ever have such a shaila. Tosfos in Masechet Menachos, I think we discussed it when we learned Masechet Menachos, already discusses this issue if somebody's missing a hand. So he's supposed to put on tefillin on the left hand, he's missing his left hand. What should he do? Machlokes Rishonim, some Rishonim say he should put on the tefillin on the right hand, some Rishonim say he shouldn't put on tefillin shoyad at all. But why would be the halacha? Rachmana Litzlan, lo yaleinu v'lo yaleichem. Somebody's missing the hand only below the elbow, but he has the upper part of his hand. What should he do? So based on our Gemara, that clearly indicates that the entire makom tefillin is really only on the kiburis, he could continue putting on tefillin. But what I did see that the Paiskim say is that we know there's a machlokes in minhagim between Sfardim and Ashkenazim in the bracha on tefillin. The minig of the Ramah, the minig of the Ashkenazim, is that we make two brachas. We make a lahaniach tefillin on the shalyad, and we make a mitzvah tefillin on the tefillin shalroish, but even the Ramah is not so certain, and that's why, of course, after we make that mitzvah tefillin, first of all, you don't make it loud, and second of all, you have to be careful to say baruch shem kvei mechus alay levoed right after making the bracha. The Sfardim only make one bracha. Says the Paiskim, here, everybody will agree that since your situation of putting on tefillin isn't optimal, make only one bracha, even if you're an Ashkenazi. Furthermore, said the Gemara, beregel, that what's considered the regel, adar kuva, until the knee. Ask the Gemara, v'minu. The halach is that you have to be oil regel by all three shalosh regalim. So the halach is, regalim prat labali kavim. Somebody who's missing just the bottom part of his foot, and he has like a fake wood mold here, that is already not mechuyev. So we see that the knee, the foot is only the bottom part, not all the way up to the knee. Answers the Gemara, bin adarim, halach ach losh b'nei adam. By adarim, we go after what people say. When people speak about the foot, they mean up to the knee. Says the Gemara, but midarais, what are we learning? Prat labali kabim. It's only the bottom part of the foot. Ask the Gemara, v'gabi chalitza. We know that if woman's husband dies, Rachman, some of our children, her brother-in-law has to do chalitza. Chalitza involves that she takes off her shoe, the shoe from her brother-in-law. And the halacha is that the chalitza should be ragloi, the shoe should be on his foot. But Tana and the Braisa says, chaltzim na akuva lamata, that even if the brother-in-law, Rachman al-Islan, is missing the bottom part of his foot, but he has above the ankle, and she puts the shoe and takes off the shoe from that area, so we see that above the ankle is still considered the area of the foot. Answers the Gemara, you can't ask a question from chalitza. Because shani hasam, damakrom al ragloi. Since the Torah in describing the area of the chalitza of the al ragloi, it comes to expand it above the ankle all the way up to the knee. Ask the Gemara, Ihachi l'malamar kuvanami. So why does he have to have at least something left up to the knee? Maybe as long as he has higher up on the foot, it should also be considered the foot. Answers the Gemara, mi'al, the Torah says mi'al ragloi, above his ankle, v'loi mi'al d'ma'al, higher than the knee is rei mi'al d'ma'al, that the Torah doesn't say, that's not considered an area kashuf chalitza. Amra Papa, says Rav Papa, based on this Gemara, shmamina, hai istra at aronachas, that the area of the ankle and the bottom of the foot is all one bone. For says Rav Papa, this agadatach, if we're going to say that the area of the ankle and the area of the bottom of the foot, mifsik pasik, are considered two separate distinct areas, havle istra me'al, so then when we look at the foot, the ankle will already be above the regal, v'shaykoi, and the area above the ankle will be me'al de me'al, will already be above, will be too high. And even if you'll have any foot, not if there wouldn't be no foot left, rechman al tzlan, above the ankle, it won't be kashuf chalitza. Answer the Gemara, it isn't necessarily that way. Ravashi Omar, afilu teim mifsik pasik, even if you'll say that the ankle and the bottom of the foot are considered two separate parts of the foot, called the bahadi kara, kikara dami. Anything that's connected and looks like one with the bottom is one, and anything above that is mi'al, up to the knee, and above it is mi'al the ma'al. Says the Mishnah, if somebody said the mei yodai olai, I'm going to give the value of my hand. Says the marashamra shakam shav biyad ubalo yad. He has to give the difference, how much he's worth with a hand, missing a hand, and concludes the Mishnah, zechayim medarim be'erchin. Because we're going to learn a mitzvah shema tomorrow shir, that by erchin, if somebody said erech yodi alai, I think we learned this halach already, it's a meaningless statement, and that's by erchin. But by the dorim, if you said the mei yodi alai, you're responsible to give this value. Ask the Gemara, eichi shemin alai, how exactly do we evaluate the value of the hand? Amar Rava, I'm the Messiah, I'm the Chalnazakim. Just like we know, Sechta Baba Kama, Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah tells us that if one person harms another individual, he has to pay Nezek Tzar, Ripi, Shevis, Abayshis. So if one person cut off the hand of another person, he has to pay that value. So you have to see, just like there we make the evaluation, which means we evaluate how much is an eved with one hand worth versus an eved with two hands. Here two will do the same. Amle Abaya says Abaya to Rava, I don't agree. Mi dami. Hasum gavra zila. Hacha gavra shvichu. Which means as follows. A very strong vart of the Gemara. In the case of the missing hand by the person who got wounded. So when I, the assessor, are looking at this person, I see a person minus a hand. And therefore I know that he's obviously worth much less than a person, Baruch Hashem, with both hands. What's the case of our Mishnah? We're talking about a Baruch Hashem, a person who has both hands. We're trying to imagine, and based on our imagination, make an evaluation, what would he be worth if he only had one hand? You can't really get a real feel if you don't see it. And therefore, since you don't get a real feel, you won't give the real evaluation, and Hegdish will lose out. And we never want Hegdish to lose out. Therefore, Amar Abaya, says Abaya, Oimdim, Kama Adam Litem Be'Eved Ois Malachim Yada Achas, that an Eved who could do work with one hand versus an Eved Lasa B'Shtei Yodav. Ask the Gemara, Yada Achas Ma'inihu, what does it mean that you work with one hand versus work with two hands? Idach Psika, that the other hand is missing. So that's what we just said that Abaya wasn't satisfied with. Hainuhach, answers the Gemara, Ela Yochdav Mechtav Slorabarishin. We're speaking about a situation where somebody, Baruch Hashem, has two hands, but let's say he has an owner, and his owner is selling him to someone else, and the other person is only going to buy the rights of his work with one hand, not the other. What's the difference between a full-fledged Eved or buying an Eved with only one hand? And that's what you have to pay. So there's a Gevald de Gevart from Rabbi Eliel Apian based on this Gemara. Rabbi Eliel Apian says, we all remember that after Yosef interpreted the dream of Paroi about the 7 good years and the 7 hunger years, Yosef says, "V'ata yireh Paroi ish chacham v'noven." You should find a wise individual who should prepare Mitzrayim during the good years for the tough years. So Rabbi Elyeh asks, you don't need a smart person for that. You need an organized person for that. You need a good administrator for that. What wisdom is necessary in collecting food during the good times? So he says, there's a tremendous amount of chokhmah needed. Why? Because we're living during wonderful economic times. And if we're living during good economic times, for a person to be able to imagine tough times while he's experiencing good times, not everybody's able to do that. Only an ish chacham. So if we want this individual to have the job of collecting the food for the hunger years, he has to be an ish chacham. He has to be an individual who could see not what's in front of him, but what's going to be. Like in our Gemara, you can't compare, says the Gemara, the average individual when he looks at a person missing a hand versus looking at a person that's not missing that hand as if he were missing the hand. For that you need chokhmah.